Watch The Atheist Experience live Sundays at 4:30 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytaxp and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callaxp.
It's time to get sexy on Secular Sexuality.
Welcome to Secular Sexuality, the ACA show once again insisting virginity is not real. I'm joined again tonight by my third favorite Canadian. Welcome, Nate Smith.
I'm so excited to be on the show with Aaron.
Yeah, for the first time is Canuck and Truth Wanter. Welcome, ex-Christian Aaron.
Hello, thank you for having me.
This is going to be fun. Tonight, folks, we are again diving into the chilly, dare I say frigid, even phallus shrinking waters of Canadian purity culture. Dun, 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 dun. We're going to be talking about love and life after deconstructing your faith. So give us a call with your stories and questions at 512-991-9242 or on the internets at tiny.cc/callsex, because the show is coming right now.
All right. Well, Aaron, we are going to be getting to know you and your story tonight, but let's start with what's turning you on right now.
What is turning me on right now? So one of the things that has been turning me on, amongst others, is a podcast that I've been binging lately. I found it a few weeks ago. It is called, it's called Sex with Dr. Jess.
Oh, good call.
It is a podcast by a PhD sexologist. She's a Canadian, which for me, that offers a little bit of extra insight as far as like promos to like sites and things like that too, for just toys and other things like that. I also just really appreciate the fact that she does this podcast primarily with her husband, and so he's involved in the conversation, and they also have a lot of like special guests on, and they cover everything. It's not just about like a monogamous type relationship. They cover all sorts of things with like kink and BDSM to polyamory. There's nothing off topic for that podcast, but they kind of come at it from a different place. And I don't know, I've just been really enjoying it lately. I find it really informative and very sexy.
Yeah, glad to hear it. That is a great recommendation. I do encourage people to check that out. And Nate, what's got your engine revved up right now?
Well, first I want to ask Aaron, a Canadian sex podcast, I just have to ask, is there a new definition for the phrase beaver tail?
Oh, I'm sure. It hasn't been brought up yet, but maybe in the future there will be.
Well, there's still time. For me, I don't know if you guys knew this, but I'm a big video game nerd. There's a new game out, and it's called The Quarry. It's a horror game. It's about some young adult camp counselors at a haunted summer camp. Of course, because, you know, that's how every good
naturally
horror game
yeah
starts. But what I really liked about it is that the way that they approached LGBTQ plus representation, like it's sort of like it's a choose your own adventure game. So it's kind of a cinematic experience more than it is like an action experience. But the way that they introduce representation is it's really well done. It's handled through kind of a game of truth or dare that the counselors hold around a fire. So the player gets to sort of decide whether, you know, whether the two guys get together or the two girls get together. And it's not like overt and it's not shoehorned in. It feels really natural. And I really liked that if you choose to make the two dudes get together, it's not like one of the guys is mincing around. And it's,
sure,
you know, if you choose to get the two women together, it's not like she's wearing flannel or plaid, or like it doesn't play to any of those stereotypes. It's really well executed. And I'm absolutely loving this game.
Awesome. So that's The Quarry?
The Quarry, yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Well, let's get into it. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked to Drew Bacchaeus about what it's like growing up in purity culture and in a like community that's totally centered around that. and then having to learn to explore your sexuality as an adult. Aaron, what can you tell us about your story?
Okay, so maybe backing up to like where I started, I was obviously, my name is ex-Christian Aaron. I used to be a Christian. I was raised in a very charismatic, Pentecostal, conservative, fundamentalist church. So for me,
that's a lot of words that mean the same thing in really scary ways, just stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, just picture like your typical kind of conservative church, but like a lot more like wild on Sunday mornings, typically.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of like same church.
Yeah.
I think we went to the same church.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, same church, yeah. So, like, a lot of the typical things that were, that, like, have been brought up with, like, purity culture, maybe with a slight twist of, like, spiritual warfare going on with it because of, like, the extreme charismatic, like, kind of section that I was in. So I was raised with, like, the typical, like, abstinence-only kind of sex education. I would say that my sex education, or maybe I like to call it my miseducation, sure. Was very lacking for the most part. It was basic kind of like, oh, first of all, at home, we didn't talk about it a whole lot. My when I look back on my sex education, it was like the typical things you do like elementary school is like anatomy and like that kind of very basic stuff. And then grade 9, I think there was like this kind of, you know, like the STDs are scary and make sure you are, like, don't get pregnant. And like, it was just like, it was the late 90s, early 2000s. So that was like, that was basically the focus of my sex education growing up. Anything else that I knew about sex or thought I knew about sex came from either youth group kind of conversations, the, you know, the typical object lessons with like the chewed gum and heavy emphasis on virginity, especially for women, or things I read in like 17 magazine or just like the, you know, kind of gossip columns, or just like gossip I heard around at school. So it was, I had a very, like, very unclear understanding about sexuality. The main takeaway from the way I was raised and the, like, my whole environment growing up was that sex is something that you do not do at all. You stay away from it until you're married. There was this, like, obviously the Christian worldview was that, like, there was sex is this sacred thing that you save until you are married, and there's a covenant made within, you know, under God, and that the two become one. And that was obviously, like, really heavily emphasized on. One of the things that was maybe, like, I don't think it has anything to do with the theology that I grew up with, but one thing that was told to me, which affected me for a long time, was that my mom told me when I was, I don't know, junior high school, high school, when I had my curiosities about it, that if you have sex, that I will know. That's what she said to me. And so I think what that did for me was that it put this idea in my head that once I had sex, and for me, sex, of course, was penetrative. I can't say it. Penis in vagina sex. That was the line. There was a line that you crossed. And if that line, that it would somehow physically and like spiritually, and that it would be noticeable. So I felt very much from the early on that whatever happened on my like sexuality was very much public. It was nothing was private. Obviously, like the whole idea that like God's watching you all the time. So there was just this constant feeling of, I guess, a lack of anonymity in my sexuality.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, I would say, my foundations of looking at sex. It was like this weird, scary thing that I wasn't allowed to talk about and not allowed to think about. There was not a lot of conversation about like what's normal or what's even going on in my own body as like a teenage girl. Like none of that. It was very much focused on like, you need to stay pure, like pure as snow kind of thing. And everything you do affects boys and the men in such a way that like you are somehow culpable to like their own sin. And like, it was just, I mean, I think if you followed along with like the purity culture conversation at all, you've heard a lot of this before, but the way that it deeply affected me, it continued on for a lot longer past the point of me actually becoming sexually active.
Yeah. So how did that worldview end up interfering with your sex life or your early experiences with sexuality?
Right. So I remained a virgin, if we're going to go based on the concept of virginity.
Sure. Yeah. This idea that sex changes you, or that your mother will be able to know that there's something different about
it's terrifying
you.
It's to
super
me.
Pervasive and it is wrapped up in these bullshit virginity myths.
Yeah, so up until 3 years ago I would have said very boldly I would remain a virgin until I was married, but the reality, if I'm just going to step ahead in my story here, was that that's not true. I had relationships in high school that I was already exploring my sexuality. The difference was that I would have these experiences just kind of like, you know, high school kind of messing around kind of things. But then I would just be like horrified with guilt later on. And then every Sunday it was just like this, you know, this self-flagellation of just like, I'm just so awful. And like,
purify me, oh Lord.
Yeah. And also like, why, how am I even like falling into this? Cause this is a trap that's mostly for boys. Like boys are the ones that struggle with their sexual lusts and these desires and things. So like, what was I doing as like this woman or this young woman of God, messing around with that? But so anyway, I stayed a technical virgin until I was married. and I ended up getting married at 19 as is very typical in the church. I think the major difference for me was that I didn't have this strong connection with the person that I ended up getting married to. That's a whole different story. Yeah, it's a whole different story, maybe for like a different day. But basically, it was I had started dating this person casually, and then there was just a lot of pressure put on me because I was 19. I was like of age. We'd been dating for like 4 or 5 months, and there was a lot of pressure put on us that we need to like take the next step. So we ended up getting engaged, and the whole time I was filled with just kind of this dread. And I think it was a time in my life too where I just didn't really know what I was doing with my future. So I ended up going through with it. We got married. And I mean, that relationship didn't last long. I will say that we ended up getting divorced 3 years later. And throughout that whole relationship, we didn't really ever develop a strong like sexual connection. But to back up to that first time, like on my wedding day, and a trigger warning for anybody that maybe can relate to this, because I felt like there was like this course of action that had to happen, the actual day of my wedding was really traumatic for me because there's such a assumption in purity and Christian communities that like when you're young and you're getting married, it's because you're just dying to have sex. And I wasn't at that point emotionally with this person. And so the whole day was just relentless teasing from everybody the fact that I was going to be having sex at night. And just the thought that I had hundreds of people, anybody who knew me like on social media or my personal life, my mother, my father, my cousins, everybody knew what I was going to be doing that night. I was just humiliated by that. And then the actual going into that night felt very much out of my control. And when I look back on it, when I've done some trauma work over it, it very much felt like a sexual assault to me. And I will say that is coming from my perspective of it. When I speak about my ex-partner, I don't believe that there was any kind of intention on their part. By they're just as much of a victim of this culture as I was.
Sure.
But that was my experience that night. It was very, very upsetting. So that experience stayed with me for a long time. And it really impacted just the way that I viewed sex as a concept for a very, very long time.
Yeah. Well, so how did all of that begin to change? How did you start to deconstruct or unravel all this?
Right. So I, just to kind of close off that part of my story, he and I stayed together for a few years. We tried to make it work. We ended up parting ways a few years later. And I think that was just for the better of everyone. Of course, it was like, it was hard in that community. Like there's a lot of judgment on it, but we were quite young. I was 23 and I was going through a divorce. But I just, everything about their relationship was just not working for either of us. So we decided to get a divorce. And it was shortly after that I met another person who is actually my current husband. And so the biggest difference for me moving into that relationship was there was this instant connection in every way, physical and emotional. And we just clicked in a different way. So at that point, I would say that I had deconstructed purity culture. But what I think I really meant, what I mean by that is that I deconstructed abstinence only. So with this relationship, we just went with what felt right to us. We moved in together and we had a full sex life. And it was so much more gratifying in that way because it was private, finally. Mm-hmm. No one else, I thought, like, had any, like, kind of knowledge. It wasn't anybody else's business what I was doing. I was in this relationship that was much more kind of within my control, and I felt a lot more of that sense of, like, you know, the consent was there, the desire was there, the arousal was there, all those things were kind of lining up. So long story short, we ended up really liking each other and we got married. We still really like each other. We're still together. And then about 8 years into our relationship, and we would both have considered ourselves Christian, about eight mm-hmm. years into that relationship, I started deconstructing my faith. I started going through this whole process of just completely questioning everything that I've been raised to believe with my worldview and my faith. And I started very quickly going down this path of losing my faith completely. So, and that was, I mean, it was challenging for us as a couple, but I would say for the most, like he was really, really supportive of that. He could see that there was a lot of things that, you know, were bringing me trouble throughout these years. And so, all good. Yeah. Like, I'll support you with wherever you land. So I deconstruct and now I'm, or I deconvert and now I'm an atheist. And that's like, oh, and purity culture was a bad thing. So purity culture is bad. But I didn't really do the work of looking into what that meant.
And yeah, realizing you get to that place where you're just sort of angry and you know, it finally long last know who to be angry at. And yeah, that's empowering. But we still, especially since you don't know what you don't know, so many people still don't recognize that, like, oh, my sex, my sexuality, my, you know, my thoughts on the way the universe is structured. I mean, there are all these little threads that you might not even think to pull on.
Yeah. So, like, I'd gotten to this point where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm an atheist now. And I obviously, like, purity culture is bad. Abstinence only teaching is harmful. And that's that. But it was like a little while into my into my new experience, I guess, that I started realizing, like, oh, I actually need to go back and, like, undo some of the miseducation I've had and do the hard work of kind of re-educating myself. Because I actually didn't receive a sex education. I didn't receive the positive and correct information about how my body works and how intimate relationships work. And there was just a lot, even though I was in this relationship that I'm really content and happy with, and I'm attracted to my partner. And there was still a whole bunch of stuff that we needed to work through.
Yeah.
And well, for me specifically, that I needed to work through.
Well, and you had to go through a lot of those big moments again, or once again, not entirely in private. You know, with a sense of, like, an audience and working with a partner, even if this is a partner that you get along with and that has open-minded and is accepting and loving and all of that tenderness and support, that feels incredibly tricky. I mean, what were some of those, like, big moments or some of those big fears that you had to overcome?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting way of looking at it. I remember one of my big fears I had, which was just to talk to my husband that, like, hey, like, I think purity culture might have screwed me up a little bit. Sure. And, like, I think it might have been harmful for you too. That's a weird conversation to have. It's like,
I don't know how to tell you this, but you may have been brainwashed.
Yeah. So it's kind of like saying, like, okay, so we're good and we have good sex, but I wonder if it could be this whole other thing, basically. Like, I wonder what could be holding us back from having the best sex we've ever had. Or maybe some of those things that we've struggled with over the years, like, on my own end. So, like, I can maybe go into that in a little bit. But maybe that wasn't so much something going on between you and me. Maybe that was some of my trauma that I had because I was raised in purity culture. So that was kind of a scary thing to bring up in the first place, because I don't want to make it look like there's anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with us. It's just that, like, maybe there's something distorting the relationship or distorting the way that we are, or I'll just speak for myself. I know now that there was something distorting the way that I was looking at my sex life.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, any couples counselor will tell you that the most significant bit of work any couple will do to resolve something like this is to externalize the problem, to recognize it's not me, it's not you, it's, you know, this thing that we have built together, and it's you and me versus that problem. And it sounds like y'all got to that point relatively earlier. By the time you presented it, you were able to say, like, look, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing really wrong with me, but we both have been kind of fucked in the head. I mean, is that at all how it felt?
I think so. I mean, it's not like it was just like I brought it up and then the next day we're like, oh, we're fixed now. For me, it was like I brought it up and then it was like he was like, yeah, okay, like just tell me what you need kind of thing. Like, and I'm like, I need to go and like read a whole bunch of stuff and like just like unfuck my brain.
Yeah.
And take some time to think about this and I'll get back to you kind of thing. So there was like quite a long time where I was just kind of re-educating myself. The other thing was that thankfully I was in counseling during my whole deconstruction process, and I was diagnosed with religious trauma syndrome and other forms of trauma pretty early on. So it was something that I immediately brought up with my counselor and was able to kind of work through it on that end, and realizing that a lot of the things that maybe had followed me around through these years. So for me, kind of just this shutting down, even though the desire is there, but like when the moment happens, kind of shutting down, that's a really hard thing when you're in a loving, committed relationship. And I can explain it for so many years. I don't know why I just can shut down like that, or like, because it's not there, it's not going on mentally, it's physically. So just working through that and realizing it has nothing to do with him, it has everything to do with the way I was raised. And the fact that, like, I've heard this mentioned many times, but purity culture kind of trains you, like it gets you in this way of responding to your own body's stimuli to shut it down. Like, yeah. you train yourself.
It gets in your head.
Yeah. Yes. And you kind of, you teach yourself for so many years to like suppress, just like push it away. And then when you get into a sexual relationship, it doesn't just switch like that. So even though the desire is there, there's like these automatic kind of physical responses that don't just change overnight. And so that was something I really had to work through. I think maybe, so the getting some trauma counseling and then also understanding more about how to actually practice mindfulness in those moments. Like, it's been a big learning curve.
Yeah, no question. I mean, again, that idea that sex will change you and that suddenly your experience of sexuality or losing your virginity or whatever is suddenly going to change the way that your body reacts to those things. And all of a sudden, because God has blessed this union, we're going to be having this incredible wild sex. At least that's the way it was definitely advertised for a lot of the folks that I was around. You know, Aaron, you talked about getting married at a young age and everybody sort of acting as if you were at that age, like your hormones are raging, you're going to desperately want to have sex, so we better make sure we do this in the proper union. That's definitely a narrative that I know I experienced, and that a lot of people are kind of pressured into thinking that, okay, sex is a very scary topic now, but if I can just sign that document, if I can just get that diamond, that somehow magically it's going to be this like fun, exciting thing that all those sinners have been talking about all these years.
I was just going to say that indoctrination dies harder than John McClane at Christmas time. Absolutely. And I've been watching the YouTube chat, and yes, the quarry is great. Also, yes, this is a Pride stormtrooper. It is. And it's amazing. So yes, chat, that is what that is. And also, folks in the chat, we still have open lines. Mm-hmm. So if you have something to contribute to this conversation, please give us a call. Again, it's 512-991-9242 or tiny.cc/callsex. And real quick before we move on, I just want to throw in that this really affected me as a young teenager struggling with my own sexuality, being someone who is definitely not straight, but somebody who could pass for straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I was encouraged and impelled to not act on what I would have found the most satisfying sexual experiences. You know, like, I like women, I can be with women, but I prefer men. And had I admitted that to myself a lot earlier, I could have been a much, much happier person much sooner in my life. So yeah, that definitely rings true for me, what you were saying, Aaron.
Yeah, it's just the lack of freedom to just be curious curious about your own, what's going on inside yourself. Like there's this kind of very strict and very binary path, and you're on it whether you want to be or not. And any curiosity that you have about getting close to the lines on either side, like it's just shut down in such a harsh way that you end up self-regulating and self-policing yourself, even when there's nobody around.
Right.
I think that's the harm of being in fundamentalism or whatever some would
say. It turns
say,
your kind of, conscience to. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So even into my 20s and into my 30s, here I am like in a relationship that I want to be in, that I chose to be in. And I'm still policing myself all these years later because of that was kind of just the way that I guess in a way, the lanes I was in while my brain was developing, that's what mm-hmm. it feels like.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And there is something to be said about those things getting pretty hardwired through use. Mm-hmm. But despite what we have believed for so long, good neuroscience is showing us right now that no matter how old you are, you can carve those new pathways. You can start fresh. And I'm glad that you had the support of a therapist early on in this process. But I just want to emphasize to everybody, it is entirely possible for you to have a overwhelming bodily reaction to sexuality, to a number of things that aren't wrong, but that might make you feel like you want to throw up, or that might make you feel terribly uncomfortable. And that is not an accident, but it also isn't permanent. And it's just important to recognize that we can retrain our bodies. We can retrain the reaction that we have to sexual stimuli, as well as a number of other great things. But with all of this, you're talking about this moment where you kind of recognize, oh no, there's actual work to be done here. What did you see in yourself at that moment? I mean, when you looked in the mirror and thought, okay, there's a problem, what kind of image did you have of yourself as a sexual being?
I think it's just, I didn't see myself as a sexual being before. I saw myself as, I mean, when we talk about things like gender roles and biblical roles, I saw myself as this side character in a movie where someone else is the main character. It doesn't really matter what is going on in me internally, because it's not, I'm just kind of a side character to this other person. And it didn't, it's not about my husband. It's just about the man in this whole setup, right? I very much so just felt like these things were kind of cut out there for me, and it didn't really matter how comfortable I was with it, that there was just this role that I needed to fulfill, and that's just the way it was. And yeah, you might have some of your own kind of like wants and needs and stuff like that, but they're not that important, because for one thing, being taught like the incorrect things about men, about how sexuality works, for one thing, you just get this overwhelming kind of like sense of guilt, kind of, that if you're in a relationship with a man, that there's these needs that they have, and you never really touch on like what your needs might be as, you know, the female partner in that relationship. I'm so sorry. I'm talking in very heteronormative context, but sure. that's where I'm coming from in this.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and Nate mentioned his experience, but not dissimilar from mine, of recognizing like, I am not straight, but I can fake it well enough if I need to. But I think there's a really related idea there of being asexual or gray spec on some level, and being in this place where nobody's taught you the pleasure of sex, and you just kind of assume that nobody likes it, or everybody likes it, or what's wrong with me? And there's no narrative around that. And so you kind of force yourself. And, you know, some people may come out of it on the other end, like you did, Aaron, recognizing that, okay, I can heal from these things. My body is not working against me. I do enjoy all of this. But there are many people that are never going to enjoy sexuality, or not going to enjoy intercourse specifically, or. And those folks may never even have that label or access to that information beyond I'm broken, beyond there's something wrong with me.
Exactly. I think what I'm kind of connecting here is that I saw myself through a filter that I was kind of given, that like women are supposed to be very docile and very like just waiting upon the, you know, the, like, I'm looking for the right words here, but basically always the recipient, always the recipient, waiting, gentle, quiet, and just that demeanor and like kind of like the vibes that you would get from that.
Mm. Paul's ideal wife.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, Psalms 31 woman.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. But the problem was, is that I can think back to early on and realizing that what I've been told through counseling is my true self peeking through. I would have moments, right? I would have these moments where I would be very blunt about something and like I would kind of speak a little bit more crudely, I would say, like as a Christian. Or when I was in my relationship with, I had a long-term boyfriend in high school where like we were very, very connected. And there was moments in that that I felt very like, this is what I want. This is what's coming from me. And then later on, I would always rationalize to myself of why that was wrong. And that was actually some sort of sinful nature coming in. And that wasn't the true me. It was always this denial of my true self. So in my working through what I was taught wrong about sex and re-educating myself, the moment when I realized that true part of me that had kind of been trying to come through for years, and like sometimes she would come through if I'd had a few drinks or something like that. Like there's sure. moments. She wasn't always hiding.
She came
out sometimes. That's a full-fledged whole part of me that is like totally healthy and normal and deserves as much voice as every other part of me. That was a huge moment for me when I was like, oh, that's great. That's me. And that's like, that's what's missing in my life is that part
Sassy
of me.
Sassy Aaron.
Oh, yeah.
Sassy Aaron makes a show. Nice.
Sassy Aaron or this like sexy part of you starts to come out and become like more part of who you are. How did your belief shift?
My belief around like sex?
Yeah. Or just the values, the ideas, maybe the assumptions that were kind of holding you back.
I think some of the assumptions that were starting to change was that I realized that that's not the ideal woman, for one thing. Mm. That this passive, quiet, doesn't say what she wants. Like, and honestly, there's a big part of non-confidence in that whole idea of what I thought was like the, you know, how women were supposed to be. That person eludes a lack of confidence. And so there was this major mismatch with what I realized when I started to understand more about what, I'm not talking just about men, but just about people. When you're in a relationship, one of the most exciting things is when your partner shows confidence and when they show enthusiasm.
Enthusiastic
and I was like,
consent.
Holy, like that's what's been missing is that I've been holding back my enthusiasm and my own confidence because I thought that was bad. So when realizing that there was like this, it wasn't even something I had to reach that far like inside myself to get it. It's just something I had to stop suppressing. So when I started to see myself wholly as that person that like this, I have these things I'm interested in. I have these desires. I have these needs. Even just being able to express myself truly for how I feel about my husband, because there was a lot of times where I like, there was like the attractions there. I want to do these things, but then I'd hold it in for thinking that had some sort of virtue, but it didn't. It really didn't. I hope that's making sense for everybody.
No, you're making perfect sense to me. And folks, again, if you have something to contribute to this conversation, or even if you just got an anecdote about how purity culture has affected you or someone you know, please give us a call, 512-991-9242, or visit us at tiny.cc/callsex, because this is something that affects a lot of people. It doesn't matter if you're straight, if you're on the spectrum, or as our next caller wants to talk about, if you're on the asexual spectrum. And we kind of touched on this a little bit, but we have Alex calling in from Oklahoma who wants to speak a little bit more to this. And I'm super interested to hear what she/they are the pronouns. I'm super interested to hear what Alex has to say. Alex, welcome to Secular Sexuality. What's on your mind?
Hey, so I just, you know, wanted to call in and because I heard you guys talking about asexuality, and given that Pride Month tends to be the month where, you know, asexuality and aromanticism comes up as if it belongs in the LGBT community, I figured that I could talk about you know, being ace, and especially in the South, and kind of how that feeds into purity culture.
Yeah, no, please do.
How has it been different for you in the South?
Because you kind of already talked about it, but that there's this idea of there's this way that you're supposed to behave, and that when you become a certain age, that you're supposed to experience this sort of deviancy and this sort of attraction. And then as someone who was ace, I never experienced that. And so I'm being surrounded by all these people telling me how I'm going to be broken, but then never experiencing that. And so just kind of being left out and then wondering, why am I not feeling the things that I should be feeling? And why am I different? And then the other thing with being ace is that, well, I was familiar with the LGBT and the letters in there. I didn't know that asexuality was an option. And so it was, I didn't even know it was possible to not feel certain things and that it was valid. And so it felt like I had to, that I was being pushed to become something broken and deviant. And when I've tried to go into counseling and like look at different things in that way, I was told that my lack of feelings were healthy, that they were just how everyone was supposed to behave, and that's the way things were, and that all of my feelings and everything, they weren't ace, they weren't anything special, that was just how I was supposed to be. And I dropped that therapist pretty fast, but I went to a lot of ace groups, and it turns out that a lot of people in the spectrum had this feeling of not belonging and being this sort of broken freak. And then again, when reaching out and looking for help without knowing that being asexual or any part of the ASPEC community was possible, just not knowing that. And then for me, it was more damaging than the gender dysphoria that I've gone through. And so I know it's not the same for everyone, but it's like I would have rather have just gone through all the issues of being non-binary than been asexual if I had to choose, just because of the lack of information and the feeling of not being a correct or whole human being.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, we minimize female pleasure so much, and we, you know, joke about the female orgasm and all of these kinds of things, to the extent that women who would otherwise be allosexual and would have satisfying sex lives, a lot of what Aaron's been describing to us, are lumped in with people where that's not at all the case and not at all appropriate.
And it's really difficult to find that language too. Like, I know when I was young, growing up as an irreligious person, I didn't even know what the word atheist was. So I probably was an atheist, but I didn't even know what that word was. And I think that's sort of a good analogy for kind of what you're describing, Alex, is just finding that language is so difficult when you just haven't been educated on it. And that I think is part of the real insidious nature of purity culture, is that you're so sheltered from these other things that are perfectly normal. They're perfectly normal part of the human experience, but you're just taught that anything other than penis and vagina, tab A into tab B sex, is completely wrong and you're broken because of it. Is that sort of resonating with you a little?
Yeah, that's 100% what it is, and that a lot of the people feel that it's broken. And I think there's also something else that plays in to the ASPEC community that tends to not be talked about, is that because we have a lack of sexual attraction, you can still be sex positive, sex neutral, or be sex repulsed, and that because of purity culture, there tends to be a lack of understanding. Like, we don't have the boundaries to be able to express ourselves and to validate ourselves. But then again, within the community, there are issues of recognizing what are the boundaries that we're supposed to have, that, you know, we have, that we should have for other people who are allosexual or ace people who are sex positive. And how do we have conversations that are also inclusive to them without invalidating their own experiences? I see this big, mostly like within response to the kink community, and a lot of asexuals rejecting the kink community who are sex negative, and not understanding the history that the kink community has played in LGBT rights and everything like that.
Yeah. Well, not to mention that a number of otherwise grayscale male or largely sexually uninterested folks often do find a home in kink. And, you know, that's certainly not going to be every ace person's experience, but I think that there's a bigger overlap there than people maybe realize.
Yeah, it sounds like to me that you've experienced a lot of feeling a lot of maybe invisible to a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. And I think it further goes to like this idea of education and finding language, finding appropriate kind of ways to explain your own experience and educating the larger masses about it. Like, this is something that could be so much easier if people just allowed for a further, like, larger spectrum of experiences within the whole conversation, and letting that be kind of steered by yourself or by people who are going through that experience, listening to you and believing how you are experiencing it. I think that there's a real need for that, because the alternative is that many, many people feel extremely invisible to the larger population because they're not even a part of the conversation appropriately.
Absolutely. And that's also one of the other reasons why I wanted to call in and why I try to speak up in my own personal life, is because I know what that feeling of invisibility, I know what it did to me, and I know what the pain it caused. And I know that if I just had at least one person that I had in my life or that was visible or some form of connection, that there's a very good chance that I would not have experienced the pain that I did. And so I kind of, you know, I've got the ace flag hanging up outside my house, and I try to be as open as, you know, I mentally can handle at whatever moment, because I know what it would have done for me. And so hopefully if someone is going through that, they can see someone and be like, well, hold on, this kind of sounds like what I'm going through.
This is real. This is an option. Yeah, just because it is Pride Month, it's probably worth taking a moment to say there are good people, there are allies that will still, say things like LGBT, blah, 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 or, you know, alphabet, blah, blah, blah. And I appreciate that there is not a intention for dismissiveness there, hopefully, but it's important to remember that there are letters that are significant after the T. Asexual is one of those, and these smaller communities don't get our attention in ways that they really should. So, Alex, I really appreciate you being willing to walk us through that experience a little bit and just kind of show people that there are other ways to be and exist.
I also want to I also wanted to say thank you so much for whatever work you have done in sharing your experience, whether it's been online or you said you had your flag up, and just taking, that's a lot of work that you have put into explaining this to people. Coming from the background that I have come from, I had no knowledge about this a few years ago, and I appreciate the patience that people have with people who are trying their best to learn as well. So that's a lot of mental work for you. So I just want to say thank you for the work that you've done and any like steps along the way, because it is helping move people and move more people into the right frame for looking at these things.
Yeah. And thank you so much for letting me call in and talk about this. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for participating in the chat, Alex. I always see Alex in the chat for SecX. So folks, if you want to participate, you can always join us there. You can call in, lots of different ways you can participate, but, Alex, thank you very much for calling. And I appreciate that perspective. That was cool. That was a good call.
All right. Well, have a great night, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
You too. All right. So we do have other folks on the line, but before we move on, the ACA is a pretty big deal. We got some other shows going on. Yeah. And I thought before we move on, maybe we ought to take a quick peek at what else has been going on around the atheist community of Austin.
Monogamy is not healthy for them, or doesn't feel good to them, or doesn't work for them. That also possible.
Yeah, the old joke is that a sex addict is just anybody who has more sex than their therapist.
Philosophically, you have arbitrarily chosen to believe something, believe in a Christianity, we'll say, and you think that that's superior, but you don't have any actual evidence, any actual basis to think that that's a superior moral system, do you?
How many times have we had callers call in and say, oh, I'm the only one in such a town that's an atheist, and then the host says, oh, have you tried these three atheist organizations that are just down the street from you? I mean, it's, you feel like you're alone, but we're all alone together.
There's another option, which would be to go, if there's not evidence for the God and we can't explain how we could tell the difference between God and our imagination, maybe you don't believe in the God. Maybe you just go, I don't know.
Secular Rarity said that, you know, we don't have proof for God. I have proof that people exist. So I would like to know, what is 100% proof that people exist?
Are you going to go into solipsism?
Please,
I definitely
please
don't
no.
have enough time for that. You realize that, right?
Right, and we are back. We are back with Jake calling in from Georgia. Jake's recently been divorced and has been questioning his sexuality for quite some time. So this is probably difficult to speak about. And Jake, pronouns are he, him. I really appreciate you calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm 34. Like I said, I was recently divorced. And I've been attracted to certain aspects of men for my whole adult life. And I've always kind of questioned that and kind of put it at the back of my head. I also really don't like men, which is ironic. I kind of like would consider myself a feminist.
I think there are a lot of straight women that
relatable.
Recognize the struggle.
Relatable.
You're in.
Okay. But I don't know. That might be why certain things happen the way they happen, but I've been having a hard time finding people to talk to about it. I mean, my best friend was her. I mean, I married my best friend because, you know, it's, I don't know who to talk to about it.
Yeah. So if I understand it right, you are in a marriage. It's going okay. You're enjoying the connection,
no,
but you're also struggling with some pieces of your identity. Help me understand.
No, we've been divorced for a little bit. Now.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I missed
that piece
of things. It's okay. It was mutual. It's fine. But I don't know. I'm questioning things and I'm trying to figure out how to navigate that safely. And it doesn't seem like there's a lot of support for people my age in particular, other than like, at least locally here has been, my experience has been more like hookup type. I don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Jake,
I hear that.
I can totally identify with what you're saying. I also was in a straight relationship for a long time. I have three great kids from her and we're still friends, but I was asking myself those questions for a long, long time. And it was so difficult to finally admit to myself and come clean with myself and with her. And I tell you, man, once I did it, just, it got so much better and it takes practice. Like you just got to kind of jump in the pool when it comes to that kind of thing. At least for me, I'm not trying to give you advice, but for me, that's what helped me, was just to come right out and own it. And I was surprised by how many people were supportive. I was surprised by a few people that weren't, but to quote Dr. Seuss, those that mind don't matter. And those that matter don't mind.
Fair to say. I mean, Jake, are you at a place where you feel like you recognize what your orientation or sexuality is broadly? I mean, I don't think any of us know exactly who we're going to be attracted to until we meet that person and all of a sudden we are. But do you feel comfortable with who it is or what it is that you're looking for?
I mean, I know I'm sapiosexual. I know that I am attracted to females for sure. Mm-hmm. But I am also attracted to females that are more powerful, I guess. Mm-hmm. Dominant. I'm also attracted to certain men that have like a very specific spark. I don't know how to describe it.
Sure.
But I don't know. Like I have always, for Halloween's most years, I would dress in drag as like a joke kind of thing, but I enjoy it quite a bit. And I like to, I don't know where to go about that. I don't know how to explore that.
Yeah, well, we talked a fair amount last week about exploring gender through pornography, and that may or may not be the healthiest or best choice for everybody. But if you are wanting to have, like we were talking about with Aaron earlier, these experiences in a private setting and format, I would definitely encourage you to explore your gender in that way. I mean, there are not a shortage of websites on the internet that are specifically oriented around dominant women and around exploring or tiptoeing into a bi-curious or male-interested type of gaze. Otherwise, Nate said that the best strategy here is to kind of just jump in, but I can also recognize why there might be a bunch of barriers to that. So what kinds of things are getting in the way or maybe slowing you down right now?
Community. Where I live in particular, it doesn't seem like there is much of a community here. I could just be completely oblivious to it, to be honest. But I don't know how to find it. Also, my support system is not, it's non-existent, which has been pretty hard.
The what has been?
That his support system is non. And that's tough, man. I wasn't trying to tell you that might work for you. I'm just saying that's what worked. You might look into making a FetLife account. We've talked about FetLife. Oh, I'm sorry.
FetLife, I mean,
no, that's okay. You can take my advice. I'm not that well. I mean, I have less to offer in here. I was just going to say that, like, I think everybody here can relate to feeling completely alone, and maybe not in the exact same way, but that the thing I've come to learn is that there are communities everywhere, even as niche as you may feel in whatever it is that you're trying to navigate through right now. There are communities and maybe even specifically in the same town or city as you, but regardless, there's communities that are like online that you can talk to and bounce ideas and explore that area of your life with. Nate just brought it up. There are communities like FetLife where you can go on and create a bit of a social support network and meet people who can maybe help you work through some of these things. I was also going to say kind of similar to what Christy said. I'm not a professional in this aspect, but I can understand going through maybe I haven't taken a good enough look at my own sexuality and where do I actually fit on this kind of spectrum of things and how do I even figure that out? I think that was some of the ways that I have done that as well, because I came out of my faith obviously just being in a heterosexual relationship and never even wondering whether I had any other kind of preferences or leanings, right? So I had a time where I was trying to like figure that out. And for me, one of it was looking at different kind of porn and reflecting on fantasies and what kind of things go on in my head. So taking the time to really like reflect on those things too helped bring clarity to me.
Yeah. And I'll say, Jake, that FetLife can be great because it can connect you with communities that surprisingly are not necessarily going to be rushing to have sex with you, right? Like there's opportunities for munches and things like that. But also there's value in setting up a Grindr profile and having that exploration. And I want to stress that no matter where you are, you can set up a Grindr profile and there will be men on it. That's one of the facts of the universe. And I can absolutely appreciate, Jake, why it might feel like you're not ready for that step. And that's okay. But as you're working to build your support network around you, I just want to make sure you know that no matter where you are, that is a sincere option that's ready for you when you're ready for it.
My the only other person I told about this was my realtor, actually. And he suggested me getting Grindr, and I did. And I will honestly say I had a really, really fun night the first night. The second night was also fun. But I will say that was from a perspective of like being home, right? I feel uncomfortable meeting these people. I don't know. It's like it's something weird to... I'm trying to find a way to enter this community properly, I guess.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I always hope and expect that new members would be respectful. And I would definitely encourage anybody who is struggling with their sexuality and looking to maybe grow and expand and work through some past trauma or some uncomfortable stuff to go slowly, to be mindful. But without wanting to put too fine a point on it, I really think that what Nate said earlier about there's nothing to do except to do it is kind of true. So, you know, go at a pace that feels right for you. If you need to, you know, shut all of those apps down except for like one day a week or one day a month or whatever else, that's completely valid. Go at a pace that feels right to you. But I also think that you can prepare all day, every day, and it's not going to necessarily prepare you for what it's actually like to have a stranger's dick in your mouth. And if that's an experience that you are curious about, I would encourage you to support yourself, to surround yourself with support, to make sure that you feel like you have a safe landing pad, but also to remember that it's going to be okay. It's just one night. And if you enjoy yourself, fantastic. And if you feel like, okay, I've had this experience and that experience, and I like this more than that, or I like neither, or whatever else, that's all just good data. But if so long as you're being safe and responsible, I'd encourage you to get out there and to be curious and to know that nothing that happens on any particular night needs to be definitive or meaningful in any sort of like long-term way.
And if I could just tack on to that, also be honest with the other person about what you expect or what you know, what your plans are. If there's no chance of, say, a relationship or a recurring thing, just be honest about that. And, you know, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, then hey, at least you were honest with the other person. Nobody's feelings have been hurt. You've said a couple of times that you're kind of looking for the right way to enter this community. So it seems to me like you're being extra mindful not to cause harm to other people. And that's yeah. Goddamn fucking noble, man. So that's awesome. I would just say, be honest with the other person. And if it's not going to happen, hey, no harm done. There's plenty of fish in the sea, to quote a dead dating site.
What they said.
Okay.
All right, Jake. Well, and also real quick before you go, I mean, coming here to this show is a great way to find some of that community. And also on the Atheist Community of Discord, there's a significant community of folks that are on all different locations on the spectrum. So you can definitely find some community there. We're gonna drop links to it later in the show. But yeah, there's a lively community out there that you can have at the drop of a hat, and they're all pretty cool. And I'll say too that folks in the kink community are some of the most welcoming folks you'll ever find.
Fair to say.
I'm looking forward to it, I guess.
All right. Well, I hope this helped you, and thank you very much for the call, Jake.
And I'll throw in here real quickly that anybody listening who is wondering what that word we're saying is, FetLife, when you know, you know. But also, we did a great episode on this topic, and I'll make sure to have a link to that in the show notes for this episode.
Yes, I think I was on that show. That was a fun show.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a good time.
Aaron, did you have something to add before we move on? I think we've got one more caller we want to get.
No, I think you have both summed up some really good kind of resources and directions to go for Jake in his situation that he's in. I wanted to make a comment about the kink community.
Yeah, please.
Coming from a very like vanilla heteronormative kind of relationship, and just diving into even just educating myself, I think that there is so much to be learned from how the kink community acts. Like, yeah. I don't know how else to say it other than
the emphasis on consent, the validation of everybody.
Oh my gosh, I wish that regular everyday sexual education was conducted in the way in which the kink community conducts themselves, because holy, there's so much to learn from that. There's been, I grew up in it was, all that stuff was always so demonized, and it's been nothing but the exact opposite. Everything that I've looked into, every little bit that I explore in that area of my life, I'm just like, wow, like this is how it should be set up. This is how vanilla relationships should be set up. The concepts that are promoted very heavily and are taken very, very seriously in the communities. For anybody who is like curious about that, like that is one of the most welcoming and safe kind of communities that I've interacted with at all.
I would sincerely say, and I would really challenge the most monogamous, vanilla, cishet person watching tonight, the person who has been in a happy, healthy marriage for 30 years and has no interest in having sex with anybody else and has no interest in kink, I would sincerely challenge you to find your way to a local munch. And if you really feel comfortable and feel like you have access to it, I would encourage everybody listening to not go their entire life without going to a play party. We don't have time to get in into it tonight, but it is very likely not so what you think that learn. It is.
Yeah. Yes, there's so much we can learn as like a monogamous relationships from the kink community. Like, they have done way more work on this than we have. And
yeah, we've been putting our best scientists on this for generations and then
mad
stifling
respect.
All of their research.
Mad respect for that. So I just wanted to make that statement.
No, I think that's really important. And I know a bit of a digression, but I'm just going to say it again anyway. You watch dumb 2000 sex comedies and you watch, you know, Eyes Wide Shut, and you think you have this notion of what a play party is. And I assure you, if you have not been to one, you do not. And I would very much encourage everybody to have that experience at some point in their lives. I think that you'll be blown away. But with that, Nate, I'll give it right back to you.
Play party. I'm sorry, you distracted me, and now I'm thinking about the potential that. Okay, sorry. Call in show, SecX, right. Okay, we are going to talk to Sean. Sean's calling in from Oregon. Pronouns are he, him, and Sean is poly. One of his partners has depression, and he's looking for tips on how to support them. Sean, welcome to Secular Sexuality.
Hi. Yeah, it's nice to be on the show. Thanks
for calling.
Yeah. Some a little bit more background is my partner has had a lot of past trauma, like medical trauma, physical trauma, and emotional trauma. And that's kind of culminated in like some past of self-harm and depression. And recently, she actually got diagnosed with skin cancer, which is intellectually, it's really easy to like to rationalize that and be like, oh, it's really treatable and all these other things. But she's taken it really hard, partially because of some of that past medical and physical trauma that she's had to deal with. And so one of the things I'm trying to do is try to figure out how to like check in without sounding like I'm trying to like do it in a check-in way, or like how do you express that like wanting to make sure that the other person is good without sounding like without doing that full of pity or anything else like that. And I know that like especially in a lot of different communities, there's a lot of people with depression. I know it's really common in the kink community and in the alphabet mafia and everything else. So it's also feels like this is a good topic as well.
Yeah,
I'm gonna absolutely let the professional go first, Chris.
Well, I suppose I will say that the best first, last, and most important piece of advice on how to support somebody is to ask them how they want to be supported, right? I understand when we're talking about depression that oftentimes folks don't know how to ask for help or don't know how to let you know the support that they're needing. And I absolutely appreciate that. And you know your partner, you know what might be nourishing to them, what might be supportive to them. But more than anything, I think that we can get a little squeamish around mental health. I think that we can get a little bit awkward and uncomfortable. And the truth is, to show true compassion, all you need to do is be present with the pain. And so if they are willing to share that pain with you, you really don't need to do much more than listen or be present or be available. And it's nice to show up with flowers. It's great to show up with soup or a movie or whatever else, but let them let you know what's useful.
That's so brilliant. Go ahead, Sean.
I've definitely done that. I was fortunate to have a counselor as a father. And so that was one of the few things even in the Christian counseling that he did, that I did get like some really good insight into. Ironically, it also really goes well into kink. Ask them. But the biggest problem is also like there's the distance factor in this relationship specifically. So that makes it really hard because this person is several hours away and has specifically expressed not wanting me to show up randomly. And so I'm trying to find other ways of getting that sort of check-in, like making sure they're okay without, I don't know if that makes sense.
And I hear all of that. And Sean, I don't know you. We've been talking for 97 seconds. So if what I'm about to say isn't true, then it isn't true. I'm not going to try and push this narrative. Yeah. But I would be curious and want to ask how much of what you're experiencing right now is a altruistic desire to be loving and supportive and to see them get the help that they need? And how much of it is your own anxiety and your own concern? Both of those feelings are incredibly valid, but you would react and nourish those emotions in different ways. And so I would encourage you to honor their autonomy and to follow their lead. That doesn't mean that you just dismiss that nervousness that you may be feeling.
Yeah. How would you deal with that second emotion?
Yeah.
Well, I think what are some ways that,
like,
you know, I mean, everybody's reaction to stress and anxiety is going to be different, right? It may seem a little bit trite, but there's incredible value in the old standbys, a little bit of exercise, even if that is just a quiet walk around the block, a long bath, a long conversation with a friend. All of those are things that we can say very conclusively helps to sort of ground and reset our nervous system. Meditation, grounding exercises, all of these things that we know can sort of help relieve anxiety and calm the body. But also, you know, drinking too much and watching bad movies and playing sports and video games and whatever else it is that that fills your life. A lot of this is probably going to be around mindfulness, being intentional about how you let your thoughts wander. I don't know all of the details, and we wouldn't be able to get into all of it tonight, but I imagine in a polyamorous context that there may be some tension around how much time we spend together or when we see each other and when are you with me versus with them. And all of those kinds of ambiguities can lead to some insecurity, and that's perfectly healthy and natural to experience. But I would encourage you to address those things head on internally rather than externally. And what I mean by that is if you feel uncomfortable because the world makes you nervous, you can't always change the entire world. Sometimes what you have to work on is nourishing those feelings.
Yeah. And sometimes you need someone to tell you to do the things that you know you need to do.
Yeah. I mean, people pay me a lot of money to tell them to do the things that they already need to do. It's an occupational hazard.
It kind of sounds like to me, Christy, that you're recommending that one of the best ways to maybe help their partner is to practice self-care as well.
Yeah, very, very much. We've talked a lot about mindful self-compassion on this show. And as a therapist, that's where a lot of my training and orientation sort of lies. And so my thought very much goes to you are going to be the best possible support when you yourself are confident, secure, and well cared for. That does not at all mean that you are excluded from being a loving partner or a great boyfriend or whatever else just because you feel nervous. You're allowed to have those emotions. You're a human after all. But I'd encourage you to be present with those emotions, to remember that those emotions don't make you a bad person or a bad partner. They're just part of being a human being. And I'd encourage you to be tender towards yourself and to offer yourself the type of like nourishment and support that you need.
Yeah, that's super important.
Yep.
Five and nine. I just love watching Christy work.
I know.
Well, it's much easier in this chair than that chair. Like, Sean, I know that if all of these things were easy, that you wouldn't be calling. And that's valid too. The fact that you're struggling doesn't mean you're doing a bad job. It just means that this is hard and that's okay. And if a little bit of professional support would be useful, then by all means, go and get that professional support. If you feel like now is a good opportunity to start to explore for yourself, what does self-care mean to me? You know, maybe that means learning how to meditate. Maybe that means finding a new yoga channel on YouTube. Maybe that means finding your favorite bath bomb. I mean, there's no right answer. If you are present with this feeling rather than trying to change the world because of this feeling, you'll know how to respond.
I would think too that as we nurture like our self-compassion, that when you do go to take action towards showing support for your partner, that it would come through so much more clearly too. Whatever action that you're doing to help your partner during their depression, that those actions and they would come through a lot more clearly and a lot more fully when it's coming from a place where you're fully satisfied within yourself too, and you've been taking care of yourself. I'm speaking from somebody who's like dealt with depression a little bit in the past and also health issues. It's different when somebody is there offering you support, and it feels very genuine because they have the capacity to offer it, or if they're just trying to kind of manage the emotions around it too. But
yeah, I mean, you said it earlier, Erin, confidence is sexy.
And so
Sean, I definitely don't want to leave you with the impression that you must be confident in order to be lovable, or that you need to like fix all of this, because again, these emotions are valid and they're real and they matter. But I would definitely encourage you to look at the emotion rather than the problem. Look at the stress rather than the stressor.
And that how self-care can make it so that you can actually take care of others as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. This has been really good.
Hey, glad to hear it.
Thanks for calling.
Glad we could help, Sean. Well, these two could help.
Thank you very much.
All right. And just before we move on real quick, as someone who's recently been dealing with someone very close to me who's struggling with depression, you know, sometimes you just need to shut up and let them talk.
Yeah.
That really helps, just to sit down. I realize that there's a disc there, but sometimes it really helps to sit down and just be there and let them speak first.
So much of being a couples counselor is just encouraging people to shut up, listen, and then say back to your partner what you just heard them say. That experience of being validated, that experience of being seen, is incredibly powerful medicine.
I didn't even have to pay you $900.
Yeah.
Awesome. That was amazing.
Yeah. Active listening is a skill that is worth cultivating.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Therapist, call center, leader, doesn't matter. Active listening never goes out of style, baby.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Sean, well, you have yourself a wonderful evening. We are just about at the tail end of the show, but I hope this was helpful. And if you like, feel free to call back and let us know how things are going.
Yeah, will do. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Cheers.
Well, Erin, we talked a bit about your story, mostly some of the struggles. And I really appreciate you just highlighting for folks and maybe normalizing what those experiences can look like. But just having heard the bits and pieces that I have that we haven't gotten to tonight, I wanted to make sure to take a moment to talk a little bit about what helped you find a little bit more like confidence and comfort, and what kinds of tools and strategies were so useful to you.
Right. So I've mentioned before, like, that I took the task of re-educating myself, because I realized that I had, you know, 30 something years of a miseducation in sexuality. So I honestly started listening to this show. I'm not just trying to promote ACA content, but I genuinely listened to this show. And one of my first books that I got was Dr. Daryl Ray's book on God and Sex, I believe it's called, or Sex and God. I can't remember the order.
Yeah,
now.
Sex and God.
It really triggered something for me that I needed to look into further. So it was essentially kind of just allowing that to naturally flow, like whatever thing was kind of piqued my interest. So like I read a lot of books. I got into Emily Nagowski, Justin Lay Miller, who has a bunch of interesting work around fantasies. And Ian Kerner is another resource. And then there's a whole bunch of podcasts that have these people on as guests as well. Basically, re-educating myself about, first of all, what is some of the language used around sexuality now? What are some of the common struggles that people have in relationships? What are some common issues that cis women have in sexuality? So that's where like Emily Nagowski's book was really imperative for me, coming from just a total non-education about my own sexuality to her whole work around basically the female orgasm and female sexuality, and taking a pleasure-based look at sexuality rather than just kind of like this goal of orgasm was a huge game changer for me. So just all of that, and it took time. It honestly, it took a bit of, I call it almost like exposure therapy. I needed mm-hmm. to hear these things over and over again. Like you had mentioned earlier, and I had mentioned that like my brain was wired a certain way. I needed to hear these things and reinforce it enough in my mind that whatever I was feeling, whatever kind of sexual feelings I was having or urges or thoughts or whatever were normal, I needed to hear that over and over and over again. And I needed to hear a lot of things. For me, I think learning comes a lot by hearing. So I listen to audiobooks and I'll sit and I'll re-listen to the audiobooks and I listen to podcasts and I really take it all in and I normalize it for myself. And then from there, I obviously did a little self-exploration. I took some time and I worked with both the new information I had from my sexual re-education. And I took also some of the trauma and therapy work I'd done over the last few years, combining things like cognitive behavioral therapy and mindfulness. And I tried to combine them. So I tried to be really present in my body, not escape or disassociate, which is something that I had kind of been prone to in the past, and just mindfully work through these things about what feels good to me. What do I like? What am I into? And then, I mean, that was something that I did also, like, obviously on a solo basis. And then I also expressed that to my husband, to my partner as well. So it was a process and it was scary, honestly.
Yeah. No, it really can be. We talked a couple of weeks ago to Callie Lawrence about the significance of mindfulness in sex. But I think you're hitting on a really important message here. In a couple of weeks, we're going to do an entire episode with a sex coach around the topic of masturbation. And mm-hmm. I just really want to stress in the couple of minutes we have now that if you feel like you are masturbating too much, or that it would be irresponsible for you to take a entire day, let alone a half an hour, to like sit down and masturbate in a way that is mindful and intentional and pleasure oriented and slow, there is no better medicine for getting to know your body and becoming comfortable with what you are interested in, with how to rewire that relationship between your disgust reaction and your pleasure reaction, and all of the different connections and nerve endings between your legs and everywhere else in your body. I would really challenge people to make some space for that, particularly if they are at a moment in their lives where they're feeling maybe a little curious, maybe a little uncomfortable about their sexuality.
Yeah. Like I really want to emphasize that you actually mean that. Like, take some time and schedule some time with yourself mm-hmm. and like sit down with yourself and have a date by yourself and understand yourself better. Like, that's the best place to start, right? I remember I would hear things like that, but I never really like really took it seriously. But like, no, actually spending, I'm going to, like, I had nothing going on this morning. I'm going to take the morning and I'm actually going to, like, that's my task for the morning. Or like, that's, you know, when I have time by myself, like, that is what my goal is today, is to understand myself better and to come to some sort of clarity on what I like, what I don't like. And then obviously use that in the future for, like you said, it's data to like mm-hmm. take forward. So
yeah. On an unrelated note, I will be unavailable Saturday most of the morning and probably into the afternoon. So if anybody needs me, go ahead and get in touch with me now.
Perfect. I'm seeing a bubble bath in your future, Christy.
Yeah, that'll be part of it. There'll be some meditation and some yoga, whatever those other self-care things I said were.
Okay. Rose petals. Is it going to be a red wine or a white?
Ooh, I don't know. We'll see. It's pretty hot down here, so maybe rosé.
A rosé? Okay. Hey, there's nothing wrong with a nice rosé. I love my girly drinks.
There's nothing wrong with a nice rosé.
No, absolutely not. So, folks, you can keep up with what's happening with the atheist community of Austin on our website, or you can email the ACA at tv@atheist-community.org. You can also reach this show directly, sex@atheist-community.org. And if you couldn't figure out what the website was, just rewind 15 seconds. And I think also the ACA has a bunch of shows. If you can't catch them all live, you can catch them all in one spot. One-stop shopping center for all your ACA contact at tiny.cc/AEN podcast. And if you're on the Facebook, on the Mark Zuckerberg train, you can catch us at our SecX fan group. It's at tiny.cc/FBSSG. It's run for fans, by fans. Come on along and check it out. And I mentioned this earlier to one of our callers, but there is a lively community that we work with. It's the atheist community of Discord. You can find them at tiny.cc/ACD Discord. And we have shirts, we have mugs, we have hats, we have pillows, we have merch, folks. Go ahead and get yourself some sexy merch. We have a rotating stock with special items coming in and out every month. So act now, have a look, because it won't be there forever. That's tiny.cc/merch ACA. And before we go, let's have a look at the motley crew that makes up our crew, the folks that make this all a reality while we sit up here. And Josh, there they are. Hello, folks. Thank you for all the work that you do. This show would be nothing without the fine folks that that crew our show. Mm-hmm. Christy, back to you.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, we definitely waited too long to have you on, and that's something that we're going to have to make up for by doing this again and again and again. So I hope that your calendar is clear. But for tonight, do you have any final thoughts or any kind of lingering impressions you'd like to leave with the audience tonight?
Oh, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. I've been thrilled and excited about this for weeks as we've been getting ready to come to set this one up. So thank you so much. And I'd love to come on again. My biggest takeaway is just whatever you're experiencing, whatever confusion or frustrating thing you're navigating, it's completely normal. Everything that you're experiencing is normal. And you and everyone else, you deserve pleasure and you deserve time to be curious about where you're going to go from here. So be patient with yourself and just approach it with curiosity.
Beautiful. Well said. Well, with that, I suppose there's not much left than to encourage everybody to draw a nice bubble bath, maybe grab your favorite Emily Nagoski book and take a morning, or hell, take a whole day and give yourself a big old orgasm, or better yet, give someone else one.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callth.